We are live Wednesday morning. There's a new schedule, and Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, those are the days that we will get a live show here on The Real Network. If you have any complaints, please direct them to Santa Claus at the North Pole. If you have compliments, you could send them to us. Just send them to me. I'll put my email address at the bottom of the screen just now. If you have any questions or comments, you can drop them in the YouTube. We always pay attention to those. And if you haven't signed up already, subscribed and liked and all that stuff, I'm not going to harass you about it, but do it at some point during the day today. Lots of cool stuff. Jittery Cursor says, I would love to hear Nathan's parody songs for old time's sake. I think he did one for Mabale and a couple other people too. Yeah, you did. When yeah, we started we Cliff did, Central all those years ago.
We did one called Mammary Glands for Leanne.
That's right.
I remember that.
Yeah. Leanne, about her breasts, and yeah. She loved that. In fact, we had a couple. We had a range of those.
Yeah, we had the Ginger song was the first, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was quite a hit. That was probably Lone Hill State's biggest hit was this.
Lone Hill State was a very good band. You guys were amazing.
Thank you kindly.
Yeah. You don't get together and do that anymore?
We lost two of our members to COVID.
Dead.
No. They just moved to Cape Town.
Oh, okay. I thought they were dead.
No.
Okay. You see, COVID really didn't kill that many people after all.
No. But it made a lot of semigration happen. There's just two of us now. So we go
by
the name.
Are they voting DA?
Huh?
Are they in Cape Town? Are they voting DA?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what happens there. Yeah.
I mean, look, they've got electricity there. They've got running water. It's quite amazing.
That is quite cool. I've been there a couple of times and I've seen it for myself. Their roads are really good.
Yeah.
They have solar panel traffic lights.
Amazing.
I mean, we don't even have traffic lights in Joburg.
They tried it in Joburg, but they stole the solar panels, I think.
All right. A couple of questions here. This is interesting. What is eating Gilbert Grape wasn't that...
Brilliant.
That was also a Leo DiCaprio award, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because he played the
Johnny
the Todd brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know if you can say that.
Well, yeah, because they often say in relation to that movie, since you brought up the Save the Cat, there's another bit of movie trivia that is where someone said you never go full retard if you're an actor.
I'm pretty sure that was Ben Stiller. Oh, no, it was Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder.
You never go full
retard. Which is ironic with him in blackface.
Correct.
Yeah.
That movie would not be made today.
Sure.
Right.
But what a genius movie, actually.
So brilliant. I did a very interesting interview. We'll be playing it out on Friday with David Walliams from Little Britain.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. He's written a whole bunch of kids' books, and they are selling like hotcakes. Everybody's reading them. I've got two little nephews who are just loving his books. There's one called Gangster Granny.
Yeah, he's like the new Roald Dahl.
Yeah. And I interviewed him, I think, last week, and we'll be playing it out on Friday. And he's coming to South Africa. He'll apparently be here next week. But we got into talking about Little Britain and how that would never be made today.
Sure.
You know, I remember when that show came out, there was this one sketch they did where they had this little white guy, and then these two enormous women. One was big and fat and black. One was big and fat and white. And they had like terrible, they were wearing these essentially.
Wasn't it Bubbles de Beer?
That's right. Yeah. They were wearing like these sumo suits effectively, but with horrible long tits and just really bad.
All the dimples.
It was like the biggest fat suits you could get. And it was Bubbles de Beer and Desiree. Okay, Desiree Brown, I think was her name. So they had these two, and I used that picture of this thin white guy and these two, you know, really big women, one black and one white, as my profile picture on Facebook. But Facebook doesn't know, or the people who were complaining didn't know, that these were suits, that these weren't really women. And I said it was Leanne and Mabali who were on the show with me, right? And I said, this is my profile picture. I lost my Facebook account.
Oh, my
word.
So
I told him about this. He's like, yeah, you deserved that. It's like, what's happened to you? You used to be fun.
Do you remember the sketch they did with the racist old lady?
Yes, he would vomit.
She would taste the jam squares. And she'd
go,
oh,
that's
lovely.
Jam squares, yeah.
And then, who made that? Oh, that was made by Rankupash Ramasamy. And then just vomit
she
everywhere.
She just starts throwing up.
It's so crazy.
Oh, what a great show. All right, so Nathan Rowe's with us today, and we're spending some time just talking nonsense. Just by the way, we were talking before the break about Kirsty Noem, who's just had the worst vice presidential candidature in history because she just spent her entire book shooting animals and talking about how she wants to shoot more animals. This bloodlust, this desire to kill.
They've actually introduced her as a villain in Paw Patrol.
I'm pretty sure she's not going to make it onto the list of most loved Americans. Sure. But there's another thing that she said in her book, which I found interesting, and this is all coming out this week. It's been she talked about bad day to be a goat, bad month to be Kirsty Noem. Apparently she also lied about meeting Kim Jong-un.
Oh, wow.
She's like, I met Kim Jong-un. And this is in the first draft of the book. She's now gone back and changed it because people found out she never met him. She's like, I stood up to that little dictator. Meanwhile, she's never met the guy.
Wow.
And now in all of her interviews, can you imagine what a disaster this is? Like, her PR person must be the worst PR person in the world. First of all, to say that,
just give up.
Talk about shooting animals. And second of all, lie about meeting certain world leaders. And then when she goes on important American TV talk shows and she's asked direct questions like, did you meet Kim Jong-un? You must hear the answers.
I sure did. I dragged him straight to the gravel pit along with my PR agent when she told me I couldn't write about shooting the animals. Oh, my word.
She should shoot her. That's who she should take to the gravel pit, is that. Yeah. PR person or her ghostwriter. She's blaming her ghostwriter too. Like, okay.
ChatGPT.
But she did the audiobook. Okay, so she read her own book as an audiobook.
And while reading it,
she didn't go, maybe I should take out that lie about meeting Kim Jong-un.
It's or the part where I shot cricket in the head.
Oh, yeah. Cricket and the billy goat and how I want to shoot Joe Biden's. That's how she ends the book, by the way. I mean, you could not have a more disastrous entry into public life on the national stage.
Wow.
What an absolute mess this woman is. You know, when people say, oh, you don't have enough of a go at Republicans, just listen to this show again on repeat a couple of times. I don't think we've ever spent this much time talking about any Democrat in America's campaign. So there we go. All right. One or two other things that are in the news that we need to talk about this morning. And by the way, we've got a guest popping in just now. He has written a book called, what is it? Unfuck a Country. Yes. His name is Roy Haverman. He's going to be with us. And he's going to talk to us about all the ideas he has of how we could fix South Africa. Hold it up so it looks pretty. There we go. There's Nathan with the book. There. Isn't that nice?
Beautiful.
That's great. Okay, so we'll talk to him about his book. But he's basically going to tell us about the six E's that he reckons we can fix.
Sure, that's a lot of E.
Yeah, if we get...
I wouldn't do more than one.
Yeah, you're really going to have a very rough festival if you do more than one.
That would fix the country, though. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, you think? You think it would make everyone happy?
Drop six E? Yeah.
Well, apparently we were talking about AI earlier. A Maryland high school athletic director is accused of using AI to create a fake audio recording of his principal making racist and anti-Semitic remarks.
Oh, my word.
The recording spread online and caused significant disruption at the school, the principal being temporarily removed from his position, facing harassment. Investigators believe the athletic director created the deepfake to retaliate against the principal, who was investigating him for possible financial misconduct. Okay, so let me explain the story. This guy, who's like the sports guy, he's the sports coach at the school.
The jock.
Okay, so first of all, the fact that he can even figure out AI.
Yeah.
Is pretty good.
He peaked in high school.
Yeah, most sports PE teachers at school, the athletic director is what they call him. These are not the runaway academic duck scholar types, right?
Yeah.
This guy finds an AI version of the principal's voice. He makes it. He obviously recorded
probably used Revoicer.
That one that we were talking about this morning. And then he makes this really obvious thing where this guy's like, N-word, and the Jews. And he's like saying all these things, which, I mean, I don't know this principal, but I'm pretty sure that if you're a principal and you are in a meeting with your staff, you wouldn't use language like that in any place.
He might talk about the fact that he shot his dog once, but,
well,
but he wouldn't drop
if he's Kirsty Noem. Yeah, but no, I mean, everybody knows that that's the most disgraceful and toxic thing you can do. Mm. You will be canceled these days. So this guy makes this fake recording, this AI version. It took the police about a week to figure it out. But they figured that this guy had actually just done it because the principal was actually investigating him for stealing money.
Sure.
So this is going to happen more and more. Just get ready for deep fake hoaxes.
Yeah. Can you imagine what that is like on the international political scale, though?
Oof.
Like having Putin giving an address where he says, yep, we're going to
nuke
bomb America or whatever, yeah. You know? Sure. Very scary times.
So I just think we've all got to get ready because we've already seen like non-deep fake versions of this, like Jussie Smollett, you remember him?
Yeah.
The guy who faked his own like harassment and attack by two MAGA hat wearing white guys, turned out to be two Nigerians he'd hired to like make it look like he was roughed up. Nonsense. It was such nonsense.
One of my favorite stories.
It's such a great story, right? Because it's so obviously bullshit. But anyway, it took us a while to figure out that he was making it up.
Yeah.
And he stuck to his story even after that. He was like, no, it really happened. So I suppose when you're that deep in a lie,
yeah,
it's very difficult to climb out. But now with AI, we're going to have even worse situations to try and investigate here.
Can you imagine
to figure out whether it's true or not, the recording.
Can you imagine proof in crimes?
Oh, boy.
You know, when you can literally use Sora to generate the crime happening with the person doing
it. Or you can generate some video of you on closed circuit television, sitting at home watching TV.
Yeah, there's my alibi.
There's my alibi. I'm at home. I'm telling you, this police are going to have to be really sharp to catch these people out.
Sure, we're going to have to get some of those.
Did you know that May 8th today is the World Red Cross and Red Crescent Day?
I didn't.
No, neither did I. And you don't have to worry about that ever again.
What is the Red Crescent?
Well, okay, so the Red Cross and Red Crescent are basically...
They do aid,
medical care and aid and food, and they look after people who are in war zones, refugees, that kind of thing. So they do
quite good
nice. Work.
It's, did you hear in Congo?
And the
two
Red
refugees
Cross
camps
is Christian backed. The Red Crescent is Muslim backed.
Oh, and when do they fight?
Well, no, they don't fight. I'm but they, you know, like you'd rather have the Red Crescent go into Afghanistan than the Red Cross.
Yeah,
it's proselytize about Jesus in Afghanistan. It's not going to go well.
But did you hear about in Congo they're at war, and
constantly.
But they recently bombed two refugee camps and killed about 12 people.
Horrible.
This is horrific. So go Red Cross and Red Crescent.
Yeah, these are the guys who'll go in
and the
and
Red
help.
Star of David. Does that exist?
No. Oh. But there is a theme this year which is focused on the importance of their emblems in protecting people in need during crisis. The organization is committed to those who need help the most. Red Cross and Red Crescent are often the first to respond to disasters and conflicts. Their volunteers provide life-saving skills and a beacon of hope in a dark time, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so a good idea to like take a minute to honor the people of the Red Cross and the Red Crescent. And I suppose you could throw in like Médecins Sans Frontières, the Doctors Without Borders. Yeah, good people in this world who do good things.
Mm.
I don't do good things by comparison. I'm not shooting dogs in a gravel pit, but I'm not as good a person as these people who will go into a war zone.
You're a voice for the voiceless,
guys. I don't know so much.
You are.
These people will go into a war zone and help with food, with medical aid, with need, with children who have lost their parents, all kinds of things. They'll get involved. I mean, these are really good people. I often think, where do you think on the Enneagram these people would come in? Helper?
Yeah, probably a two.
Number two, a helper. It's amazing.
Have you heard of Ikigai?
Ikigai is the Japanese art of fixing broken things.
Close. It's the reason for being.
Oh, so, hang on. Yes. I was confusing that with something else where they mend things with gold.
Yeah.
Ikigai, reason for being, but there's more to it.
Yes.
There's a really beautiful definition which you have not given. Yours is way too simplistic.
Reason for being.
Yeah. I heard someone.
I thought that was quite beautiful.
No, I heard someone describe it much more. Much more beautifully.
Aish tamas.
No,
Japanese
really.
Yours is a little thin.
Ikigai is your purpose, right?
Mm.
It's there's a whole description of this, which I must have read
just
recently.
Four aspects of it. So it's what you love doing, what you're good at doing, what people will pay for, and then what the world needs. And finding the balance between those four pillars is your ikigai.
Now that's better. You could have started with that.
Yeah, well, I thought you knew because you were so quick to jump into...
I didn't. I thought it was the fixing of broken things. But that's lovely.
Using gold, which is actually also beautiful, which means...
Sure, but if you can find... So where you have all four of those overlap is where you should be.
Yes, yeah. And it's hard to do, actually.
So what you love, what you're good at,
yeah.
what people will pay you for,
and what the world needs. Yeah.
Damn.
So if you do what you love and what the world needs... It's a mission, so it's more like just doing good. Mm. But you're not necessarily being paid for it, and you're not necessarily good at it.
So it's
fine balance in that thing. It's quite a beautiful thing to like just find those four things. I think
it's amazing.
As you said, people like...
Here we go, and suddenly we're back to the Enneagram.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is good stuff, right? And I like the way that there's a Japanese word for it. I must just not confuse
there's
it.
There's a Japanese word for everything.
Don't know. Is there?
Pretty much. They always have these great words.
Ikigai is how my ex describes me, says Carl. Mapelo says, how do we still have buildings that just collapse out of the blue in 2024 like that one in George? I don't know if you saw this, but it was all over the news yesterday. Apparently the premier of the Western Cape, Alan Windy, was talking about it. And this building was structurally unsound. Collapsed. I don't know if any people were hurt or killed, but you know, we've got like a lot of dodgy looking buildings in Joburg. And there was that Umsindiso building, I think it is, that was investigated by Judge Kampepe just recently. Also, total disaster. I mean, there was that other story not so long ago of the building that no one knows who owns it, but everyone who was in it was paying rent to some gangster.
Sure.
And when part of it caught fire, some people couldn't get out because the gangster like locks them in.
But that was happening a lot a few months ago. There were a lot of burning buildings.
Yeah.
I think they were trying to get rid of squatters in the
it's just horrific. Human, I mean, listen.
In the gnome way of doing things.
Apparently, if you go to some really dangerous countries, this is something I only heard the other day, and I thought it was fascinating. You must never take the top floor.
The penthouse.
Yeah, you must never take the top floor, even the top floors of a building. You should always be like one floor up, maximum two floors up, so that you can get out if the building is hijacked or catches fire or this. Yeah, so you've got to think about these things if you go to dangerous countries.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sure, so the CEOs are...
Put them on the first floor. So, yeah, you would think, oh, well, give me the top floor. That's the one with the best view. Or you'd think it was the safest, but it isn't.
So how do you feel being on the top floor here?
Well, it's not a very high building. Plus, I know where the stairs are. And we've got this cool balcony set up, which I could Spider-Man down easily.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Don't you think?
I think you could.
Yeah.
Yeah, your upper body strength is looking incredible.
Have you ever planned like escape routes as you walk into a room or a building?
Never escape routes, but I plan crime a lot. I don't know what. Like whenever I go into a place with high security, so like a jewelry store or something, I always think like, how would I do it? I don't know why that is.
No, I walk into especially places where there are a lot of people, like crowded places. If I'm emceeing an event or whatever, and I'm like, where are the fire escapes? Not because I think something terrible is going to happen, but wherever there's a lot of people, that increases the chances that something can go wrong.
Do you choose your table based on like being able to see?
Oh, definitely.
And I
have this inbuilt thing where whenever I walk into a restaurant or a bar or whatever, I always sit facing the entrance, always.
Interesting.
So I can see who's coming in.
Right.
I mean, you'd think I was like dodgy because I do this stuff, but it's pure habit.
Just an assassin, maybe.
I don't know. I for some reason, I like to face the door. I like to have my back against a wall so shit doesn't happen behind me.
You were Abraham Lincoln in a past life, weren't you?
maybe. Just check this out in your Enneagram. See what it means. But I do these things almost automatically. It's a weird thing. I like being... aware of my surroundings. I like to know where the exits are.
That's a very South African thing, actually.
It doesn't come from a fear or a safety. I think it's just awareness, situational awareness.
Not even a subconscious safety.
No, and it's not like I'm going to be freaked out if I sit in a different position. But if you and I go and sit down in a restaurant and there's a wall, I will put my back to the wall usually.
Okay. Have you heard of a guy called Rupert Sheldrake?
No.
You once mocked me about a book I was reading called The Science Delusion. But he's a scientist, and he's really passionate about people keep on exploring things, you know? And he went into, he did experiments onto how to know if someone is looking at you without seeing it. Yeah. Like, can you feel someone watching you from like behind? So,
and can you?
Apparently, according to his studies, you can.
Huh.
So it's sort of a lost sense. I guess. I don't know.
I think you get the feeling sometimes when you're being watched.
Mm.
I always feel like somebody's watching me. Right?
Yeah. There was a Jim Larson cartoon about, I can't remember the name of the phobia, but it was the fear that a duck somewhere is watching you.
Yes. It's terrifying. There's a name for that.
That a duck is watching.
Yes. There's an actual, I'll look it up for you right now.
An actual phobia.
Yeah.
I've never had
ducks watching you.
Even if a duck was watching me, I don't think I'd be scared of it.
Look at this. You're going to shit yourself. There's an actual anatideophobia. Anatideophobia is commonly understood as the fear somewhere in the world, at some time, a duck may be watching you. That's for real. Those who experience this fear are not necessarily worried that the duck may approach or attack them, but rather are afraid of being watched or tracked by the duck while they're going about their business.
What a ridiculous phobia. That's got to be rare, huh?
Anatideophobia. But people have it.
Yeah, but how many people can have that?
Do you know how I know about this? Because Jim Larson. Osbournes, Ozzy Osbourne and Sharon and the kids, Jack and...
The other one.
Yeah. They were talking about it.
Okay.
In like a family podcast or something they're doing. And Ozzy's like... Oh, fucking duck. We've been watched by a duck.
I wouldn't want a duck to be watching me.
Who the fuck is scared of that? It's great. I love those people. The Osbournes were the original Kardashians, let's not forget.
Yeah.
They did that stuff before it was not cool.
I've never watched a Kardashian do anything.
No, and you don't need to, trust me. All right, well, we're going to talk to Roy in just a moment or two. Find out about how we can fix this country, which is very, very exciting.
Apparently this book will make you smarter, says Carol Payton.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's very good.
Thanks, Carol.
Let me just see what Carol Payton says. She says it'll make you smarter.
Yeah.
And Tito Mboweni wrote the foreword, which is good.
He also signed our money at some stage.
He was our governor of the Reserve Bank. That's correct. Now, Tito Mboweni is more well known for the fact that he does recipes on Instagram and Twitter.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. I love that.
He loves to cook. That's what he does. Your studio is giving PBD broadcast look. What is that? I don't know what that is, Khumotso.
PPD.
Help me with that. PBD, yeah. Not sure what that is. Here in Durban, I always walk around with a German Shepherd. I don't trust these people, says Mapelo. Don't worry. You just got to beware of Kirsty Gnome.
Yeah.
Because she will shoot your
in
dog.
The gravel
she does not
pit.
Give a damn about your dog. All right. Let me know, James, when we've got Dr. Roy Haverman on, because I want to talk to him about this book. We've got Nathan Rowe in the studio this morning, and he is with us to talk about all kinds of things. Discussed a bunch of interesting stuff this morning already. Yep. Apparently, you brought up Japan, so here's something interesting for you. For the first time ever, a private company has captured a close-up photo of a piece of space debris. The mission by Astroscale involved the spacecraft skillfully maneuvering near an old rocket that has been orbiting Earth since 2009. The photo isn't just a cool space picture. It's a crucial first step towards tackling the growing problem of space junk. You know, there's so much...
What does that got to do with Japan?
Okay, I'll tell you now. So there are 9,000 tons of debris circling the planet.
Jeepers.
And that includes defunct satellites, rocket parts, even flecks of paint, all kinds of shit. We throw all kinds of stuff into space.
Gold as well.
The space junk can smash into operational spacecraft, pose a threat to people on Earth if it falls back down, which it might do. And the success of this mission paves the way for future efforts to remove all the space junk. This could involve capturing debris like the one photographed or even finding ways to destroy it safely. And Japan is the first country, obviously, they're the most conscientious.
Yeah,
they
the cleanest.
We need to clean up space.
Yeah.
I love that about Japan. I want to give them all the credit.
Have you been?
No, I'm
dying to go as well.
Oh, me too. Oh. Especially after you told us Ikigai.
Have you watched Shogun?
Yes, I remember watching Shogun.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm dying to watch.
Yeah. All right. Let's see if we can get Roy on, talk about the book. Just quickly, Carl says, I bet the Japanese are cleaning it up like they clean up change rooms when they compete in tournaments. So every time Japan goes to the Olympics or whatever else, they always have the most immaculate change rooms. When they go to sports events at stadia, they clean up after them.
Yeah.
Famously, so they did that in the Rugby World Cup last year.
Mm. Yeah.
Such tidy, conscientious people.
I heard as well that when you use a train, sometimes you have to stop and wait for these old ladies because they employ like elderly people that can't get jobs anymore. And these old ladies come and they clean the whole train before you get on. And apparently there's so much respect for these women. It's not like the cleaning staff. It's like, thank you for, you know, they're so respectful. I love that.
They ritualize stuff that the rest of us just don't pay any attention to.
But you know, the Japanese...
I know we're stereotyping here, obviously. There are bound to be some really shitty Japanese
people. There's a lot of perverts.
People,
you know that in Japan, cell phone manufacturers won't turn off the camera sound because there's so many people just taking photos of you all the time.
Creeps.
So, yeah.
All right. Slapside. Let's fix our country. So we are here to talk to Roy Haverman. He's written this book, which is called How to Fix or Unfuck the Country. I love it. 6 Things to Reboot South Africa. As I mentioned, forward by none other than Tito Mboweni. And here he is. Let's talk to him. Hey, Roy, how are you?
Good morning, Gareth, and thanks very much for having me. I'm well, thanks.
Cool.
How are you doing?
Here as well, and well done on the book.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, good job. Okay, so you've basically gone into a whole lot of things that I think fairly obvious things for South Africans. We know what our problems are. Because God knows we deal with them every day, right? But what you've done is you've made it simple. You've said there are 6 places that we need to focus on. And I love this because we don't have the ability, the focus to be able to sit and talk about things for more than 15 minutes in this country without people being distracted or watching sport or some cartoon on TV or going on their phones and doom scrolling. So what you've done is you've said 6 things, right? Eskom, education, the environment, exports, equality, and an ethical and effective state. So, Eskom, what do we need to say here, Roy?
Pretty obvious, Gareth. What we need to do is we need to get private sector generation onto the grid as quickly as possible. We need...
Yeah? It's frozen? Have we lost Roy?
Maybe he's just thinking. I blame Eskom.
I think it probably is Eskom. That would be hilarious, right? If it was because he's suddenly had to go into load shedding and reboot his internet. See if you can get him back on, guys. Just by the way, Matthew says, send all the junk to Mars like the OnlyFans girls. Hey, those OnlyFans girls are doing everyone a service. Don't you be mean to them. You don't know what it's like to be a 22-year-old who's trying to pay her way through college. How would you do it, Matthew? Very mean.
Now, student debt is a real thing.
Damn right. Japan is great at almost everything except having sex, says Vyasan. That is true. We've got a major problem there. You got him?
It's his network. He's joining us again.
Oh, okay. It was his network. Thank you, James. See, normally at this point I'd bring out the shambok.
Roy really knows how to highlight a point, though, I have to say, you know, the Eskom.
He's making a very poetic statement by actually canning his internet.
I can't wait to see what he does for environment.
Environment, he's just going to chop down a tree.
Shoot a dog in the gravel pit.
So I agree with this point Vyasan's making about Japan and the Japanese being good at everything except sex. They're trying everything they can to get people to have children. But apparently one of the big problems, and this is something new I discovered, that was old info, but the new info is that the men are so off-putting. They ask Japanese women, why won't you have sex with Japanese men?
So,
they're like, I'm not turned on by him at all.
Wow.
Okay, let's go to Roy. We got him back. from the sublime to the ridiculous. So Roy, you were just telling us about Eskom. Sorry, and we got cut off. I think you had load shedding.
Something like that, yeah.
Cool. So you were saying Eskom.
Yes. So what we need to do is obviously bring more renewables onto the grid, more private sector generation capacity. As we all know, we need to accelerate the independent power projects. Those have been delayed from time to time. And there's a great report out by Meridian Economics highlighting that if we hadn't stopped that program, then we probably wouldn't have had load shedding at the moment. And we all know why that program was stopped, and that was because the Guptas got hold of the CEO of Eskom of the time, and they delayed the bring on of renewables onto the grid. And so that's why we have load shedding, which is what I argue in the book. And so I guess it's a relatively simple answer, but yeah, we just need to do it.
But it's a relatively simple question to solve. I mean, I don't think that's a difficult thing, and I think most South Africans realize that that's number one. Once we've sorted that out, everything else will get easier, right? So education is way more complicated. And we spend more on education than any other country in the world proportionally in our budget.
Sure.
But we get these shocking results.
Mm.
I was talking to Padi Lehotla, who's the former statistician general, the other day. I interviewed him. And I learned something new. I didn't know this before. Black graduates have decreased since 1994, the total number of black graduates. It's gone down. You would think that was one area that the government could have done a little bit better in. But proportionally, again, black graduates have gone down. There may be more in number, but the proportion has gone down. This is devastating. Our government's track record on education is appalling, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I quote two big sort of global tests. The one is called PILS and the other one is called TIMS. And essentially, the one assesses reading and the other one assesses progress in mathematics. Mm-hmm. And we do terribly on both of them. And the worst is that we do worse than Kenya, for example, which actually is one of the things I bring out in the book as a really good example of a country that's done fantastic things in terms of improving learning outcomes. And one of the things that they've done is really have this relentless focus on reading. And a really interesting thing that they do is they give their teachers iPads and they basically follow a script on the iPad. This is one thing that, you know, how you bring technology into classrooms. And then they also, the other thing that they do, which many other countries do that we don't do, is make sure that the teachers actually pitch up for classes. That's like relatively easy to do in the modern world. You can have, you can use cell phone technology that the teacher has to check in, or you can just take register for them in the morning. But there's been a huge pushback from that, obviously, from the teachers' union. And even the idea of linking pay to whether or not you come to work and do your teaching has been very controversial with the unions. So, I mean, I completely agree with you. Education is quite difficult, but there are very small things we can do to push the system kind of forward.
I mean, it's almost like a joke. Teachers just need to pitch. You know, like the first rule of success is showing up.
And you just need Eskom to be able to power the iPads.
But I do like this because these are simple solutions to problems that often people like to make look complicated so that they can justify the fact that they haven't done anything about them. And politicians especially are good at that, right, Roy?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't suggest this is like the answer to everything. I kind of tried, someone asked me the other day, and I there's a really nice way of putting it. It's like, what would you do in the first year or two? So this is not trying to fix the problems. So I certainly wouldn't suggest that any of the ideas in the education chapter would fix this huge complex problem. But it's just, what would you do in the first year or two or three? So the first year, maybe what you do is you make sure the teachers pitch up, do a register. Mm. You know, that's sort of a thing that you could start doing just to kind of turn the ship and make it go in the right direction.
Roy, don't worry. I'm not looking for a fight with you. I'm not going to start thinking, oh, you're not going to solve all the problems. I would rather have 20 Roy Havermans who are trying to solve problems than another 50 miserable South Africans who complain about these things at Braai's. You know, that's one thing we're very good at in this country is moaning. I like the fact that you're offering actual solutions, so that's why we wanted to have you on. So, okay, let's move on from education, because I also don't think that that's entirely the simplest problem. How about the environment, and why do you think the environment is an element of success?
Yeah, so I mean, I think we all know that the world is heating up at the moment. And, you know, even in South Africa, if we look at the data over like 30, 40, 50 years, temperatures are going up. I do make the point that, you know, we're a small country in a big world, and we're not the biggest emitter. A lot of the emissions are probably coming from the US and China. So what we need to focus on is we do need to bring down our carbon emissions, but I think it's more important to deal with climate change adaptation and mitigation, so deal with the effects of this. You know, I talk about things that the government is already doing, which is the carbon tax, what has happened in
the environment.
Well, the idea there is it makes it more expensive for when companies emit carbon and they pay a tax on it. And that helps, you can use that money to help deal with the effects of climate change. So,
you really think what some countries would use that money for that?
I would hope so. But I mean, I think one of the big problems is obviously the money is not going to where it's needed.
No, and also, would you want to hand on the costs of all of this to the consumer? Because that's what's going to happen. Companies that pay a carbon tax are just going to increase their prices. So the average South African life just gets more expensive.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things is exactly that, is to make things that produce carbon more expensive compared to things that don't produce carbon. So a really good example is actually electricity, where for a long time it's been much cheaper to produce coal-based electricity. And one of the things has been a carbon tax on the production of electricity. It also makes electric vehicles cheaper than petrol vehicles, because for a long time they've been cheaper. So it's about kind of using the system to change how people behave.
I'm excited when you said environment, because I thought clean it up is a good start. We live in a filthy country where people litter all over the place, and it's a mess, and we don't look after our rivers and our oceans. There's sewage flowing into them. That upsets me enormously. But climate change is a first world problem, and we are such a small speck of dust on the global carbon footprint that I don't think this is an urgent one. So I don't know. It's not my book. It's your book, but I would have left that chapter out. How about...
What about that Canadian lady that suffered from climate change?
Yes. So I don't know if you saw this. I put it on my Instagram yesterday. Enormous, large woman who said that she was sick because of climate change, and the Canadian authorities agreed she's dying of climate change. And I said... Yeah, it's because she's so enormous that she has her own gravity and weather, and she's like a planet. But I don't think that was very accurate to blame climate change for that. But let's look at the next one. I like what you're doing here, Roy. So what about equality?
Yes, equality is complicated in this country. I mean, I think one of the things that we really need to understand, and I use an old idea in economics called the Kuznets curve, which says that as you start growing, sometimes countries become less equal. And what you need to do is rather deal with the problem of equality almost at source. And there, the education system is one of the big problems, right? If you are poor, particularly if you're poor, black, and a female, you often end up in very bad schooling system. And you kind of need to deal with sort of equality issues from at the very beginning. So I talk about the difference between equality of outcomes versus sort of equality of inputs, and just realizing that, you know, we need to focus more on getting people into jobs necessarily, because that also will drive substantially better in equality outcomes.
Sorry, are you saying that equality of outcome is what you're looking for, or equality of input?
Equality of input, definitely.
Okay, yeah, I think that's probably sensible. I think we've got to give everybody a chance. And again, as you said, that goes back to education. Yeah. But we have to grow the economy so there are more jobs.
Exactly. So if people aren't getting a chance, the same kind of chance, then obviously... it's unsurprising that people then end up unequal. You know, I must say I had very good chances in my youth and things have gone relatively well, but for other people, they don't have those opportunities. So it's more about equality of opportunity rather than equality of outcome. And there, that really goes back to the education system. I mean, I think it's extraordinary how different the opportunities are that people get from education.
Well, you talk about exports, and I suppose another E you could have there used there instead is probably the economy in general. And we just spoke about economic growth. But exports, to focus on that particularly, what do you think our strength could be from a potential weakness?
So the first problem is obviously that things are just not going through the ports. For a variety of reasons, our ports have sort of stopped functioning. So I mean, a friend of mine used to be a blueberry farmer, and what has happened is that you just can't get blueberries out from Cape Town port. I mean, that's a very simple example, but we know that people that run mining companies can't get their mining stuff out. And then I look around at what other countries have done, and what they often do is they concession out their ports and allow the ports to be operated by huge companies that are work around the world. And actually, I use the example of Mozambique, where the Mozambican government has gone into a 50-50 partnership with a group called Cornaldo, which is a Dutch, I think it's a Dutch ports company. And that's had huge implications for how many goods can go through the port. Similar kind of thing has happened in China. They used to run their ports themselves. About 10 years ago, particularly in Shanghai, they took a decision to start concessioning the ports and allowing more private sector operators in the port, and that had incredible has had incredible effects actually on the operations of the ports. And then around Africa, the same thing's happening. I mean, I was in Kenya a few years ago, and there's a huge port now being built to the north of Mombasa. Also, completely, the government just allows people to build ports and, you know, export.
Listen, why are our ports not working? Is it just like the teachers where they don't show up for work? Or?
Well, Roy can tell you, but
yeah, that is part of the problem
administratively. And management is a problem. And, you know, the people who are in charge don't actually know what they're doing. It's competence, right? Am I wrong, Roy?
Yeah. Competence is a huge part of the problem. And I think a lack of like management. So, you know, that core question of do you pitch up in the morning or do you not pitch up in the morning? Which is sort of
so simple.
I wish it was that simple, but I mean, just to get the simple, so the basics right, I think would be a good start.
It's like in order to live your life, get out of bed. It's the almost.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah,
I was looking at exclusive books with my book, and there's this book out saying make your bed every morning or something, you know, steps for success. Maybe that's what I should have called
Jordan
my book.
Peterson.
Make your bed every morning.
I think that's very, very sharp. Okay, the last one of your E's, your six E's, is ethical and effective state. So this is a lot more complicated than the other ones because I don't think our politicians know what being ethical means. And as for effective, you know, I watched a concerned citizen who's this brilliant woman who puts out videos every week on the government, how much they cost us. 1.3 billion rand we spend on cabinet ministers. That's not even counting the deputy ministers. And what do we get from them? Effectiveness? Zero. Ethics? Zero. These are the people who we should address this chapter to, don't you think?
Yes. I mean, I completely agree with you. Although, I mean, I think we sometimes just think our politicians are unethical. I happened to be in Stellenbosch this morning, and I can tell you everybody's quite angry with, still angry with Marcus Jurister. There's this deep lack of ethics that has really, I think, pervaded the country. It's almost like something has happened how we think as a country culturally. We've sort of lost our ability to even, I think, have shame about stealing. I don't know what it is. And it's a very complicated problem. And, you know, actually, one of the really great books that I read was in part of my research for this book was a book by Brian Klass called Corruptible. And he talks about how culturally what starts to happen with countries is that they become less and less ethical because it kind of becomes okay. And you kind of have to think about fixing that problem almost at source. Obviously, the first thing you need to do is you need to punish people for being unethical. And I don't think we do enough of that. So you need to not only have rules, we've got great laws in this country. We've got an Anti-Corruption Act and an Anti-Money Laundering Act and all these sorts of things. But we've had no convictions for many of those things.
Yeah, I couldn't agree. We've got a constitution that requires people to be accountable. I interviewed Judge Johan Krichler yesterday, who was one of our first constitutional court judges. And he was saying, it's all there. It just needs to be implemented properly. I mean, otherwise, what do, Nathan? We take them down to the gravel pit, right? That's what we need to do.
Maybe that is the answer.
All right, well, we know who to call. Governor Kirsty Noem. Yeah. All right, so why did you decide to write this? Was it just frustration with people moaning and not actually coming up with solutions? Or did you sit there one night and go, I'm going to actually try and solve the problems that the rest of South Africa just doesn't seem to want to solve?
Well, I mean, the worst part of the book is that it is actually a summary of probably what is government policy at the moment. It's not my own ideas. Many of these ideas are actually have come out in almost all the ideas come out in a Treasury document of about 6 years ago.
So you're telling me they already know this stuff, but they're just not doing it.
Pretty much.
That's I'm pissed off because I thought
that's maybe what I was frustrated about. That's why I'm trying to write
this. Actually, comes from Treasury, and they should just damn well do it.
So.
I think as a country, the IPPs and electricity is a really good example, right? It is government policy to have more IPPs on the grid. It is government policy to allow more private sector generation. It is government policy to allow concessioning of the ports. But I don't know what's happening. These things are just not being implemented. And I had a really great discussion at one of the interviews with Judge Dennis Davis. And he made the point that, you know, we just need to hold the politicians accountable for the things that they suggest they should be doing, and have a way of actually using Parliament and the tool that we have to actually just make sure these things are done.
Yeah, orange overalls, I'm telling you, short of the gravel pit. So how are we going to get them to implement these things, says lovely Lady Lee in the comments. Do you think that there's a chance that we could have any of these ideas executed and that we can hold people accountable?
Yes. I mean, I think, fortunately, the great thing about the book is that I think I'm trying to use the book as a way of showing people what you should hold politicians accountable for. So if they say that they're going to do more IPPs and allow more private sector generation for electricity, then we shouldn't be complacent, and we should encourage them to do what they say they're going to do and hold people accountable, make sure that we use Parliament to actually get these things done. I think, you know, I had a real bit of a big debate with Peter Todd-Montalto, who wrote a column a few weeks ago saying, oh, South Africans must just be more patient. And I kind of think maybe the time has come for us to be less patient and not to sort of accept when the lights go out. I think we've sort of become a little bit, you know, load shedding happens and it's okay. We sort of go and make coffee on the gas stove.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're like Boermakker plan instead of to here and no further.
We're almost too resilient.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the problem, yeah. Enemy.
Our pastors have been spraying doom in our face for too long.
Well, Roy, all I can say is well done on the book. It's called How to Fix a Country, 6 Things to Reboot South Africa. I think we should hand them out for free to government. So maybe we can get some NGO to buy 200 of them, and we just give them to those 200 cabinet ministers that are costing us so much money. But well done on the book. It's terrific. And I see Tito Mboweni wrote the foreword.
Yes. I mean, I used to work for him. I think he pushed a lot of the ideas originally. Certainly we had a long conversation the other day. I think he shares the view that the country has a future. I think we just need to get these things done.
I'm a big fan of Tito Mboweni, and I also liked Trevor Manuel, who you also worked with back in those days. So I'm kind of, there's a part of me that wishes those guys were still at the levers of power in the Treasury and Reserve Bank. I think we had growth, which was commendable at that point. We had also had a president who wasn't busy feathering his own nest or hiding money in a sofa or any of that stuff. So let's hope we can get back to that. It is an election year, so this ultimately is our opportunity to hold these people accountable.
Absolutely.
All right. Very nice to have you on, Roy. Thanks for joining us this morning. That's Roy Haverman and How to Fix a Country. Well, now we know, Nathan.
Yeah, now we know what is actual policy already.
Oh, very, very. No, but this is good stuff. Mm. And the fact that it's been sitting there and that they already had these answers, it's to Roy's credit that he dug them out and forced them to actually take notice of this stuff.
Yeah.
But there we go. Lots of fun this morning, and thank you for talking absolute nonsense with me for 2 hours.
We didn't even get into one conspiracy theory, Gareth.
Dude,
I'm disappointed.
I know, but we went to Ikigai.
Yeah, we did.
Enneagrams.
We went deep.
Shooting many animals with Kirsty Noem.
Sure.
Which really is what the book should have been called.
Yeah.
Shooting many animals. And I learned a lot this morning. You also taught me about a bunch of different AI things that I'm going to spend the whole day now playing with.
Brilliant.
Including this one, Suno. I'm going to write an opera.
Write an opera.
Watch me.
Yeah.
And finally, my dreams will come true.
Maybe day 4 and 5 of the week, you could just make musical numbers.
You know, I think that I'll leave that to you. I've seen you perform, and you're way better than I'll ever be.
Yeah, but I can't do it as quick as Suno.
It doesn't matter. You're better. All right, dude. Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's lovely to see you. And I promise you next time we'll dress you up in the green so
yes,
it looks like you're just
that.
A floating head.
That'd be amazing.
All right. That's all we got time for this morning. We will see you on Friday morning with Simpiwe and Ben and all the rest. Look at Nathan trying to grab the books off the shelf. Looks like a mime. All right. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye.